Okay, we're at the kind of the end of, getting towards the end of our lessons on finances, money and marriage, and we're getting towards the special, we'll call them special issues. It's point four in your handout, so it should be page six, towards the back, page six. So we're talking about special issues with wealth, and the first one we're going to talk about is, does the Bible allow for retirement? Okay, does it allow for retirement? I mean, does it allow, does it, what does it say about retirement? So we'll read a few passages and kind of look at what we can take away from that. Does the following passage forbid retirement? So this is the first question. So we're going to look at Matthew 6, 19 to 20. Okay. Let's get some readers. Gabe, can you get Matthew 6, 19 to 20?
Yeah.
Page 6.
Page 6. Oh, you got the
sorry, this
formatting.
Is my, this is my, Matthew 6, 19 through 20, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal.
Okay. So, what are we not supposed to do?
Lay up treasures
on earth. And what are we supposed to do? Lay up treasures in heaven. Okay, so then the application, like, is planning for retirement or retiring, would we include that as storing up, laying up treasures on earth? Why or why not? Okay, why? What do you think, Gabe?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I've just always heard it as, that's what you do. That's what you do.
Okay.
Anyway, I can't really justify.
There's a difference between laying up treasure and being smart and not, you know, living off of your kids or the government or something like that. Mm-hmm. Knowing that when you hit a certain age, you're not going to be able to bring in as much money as you are now.
Okay. Yeah.
I haven't heard the what's the, I don't know the exact book and chapter, but it says every man shall sit under his own vine and fig tree and we shall be safe in this nation. What is it?
I don't know.
I'm driving blank right
okay.
now on what it is. I'm going to look it up. I was going to look it up.
Define retirement.
Yeah. What are we saying here? What do we mean by retirement? What do you think is a...
being done with income-producing work.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, we're never done with work as believers, especially ministry, but... going to an office or producing an income.
Mm-hmm. What's kind of the contrast? Like, why there's kind of a justification in the Matthew passage? What's he saying? Don't lay up treasures because of this, but lay them up here because of what?
You don't want to store them here because they're not going to last.
Yeah, there's a sense
you
of
want to invest for the future as far as the eternal future, not just 50 years from now or 60 years from now.
Yeah. So in a sense, there's this idea that it's foolish to lay up treasures thinking that they'll last forever type of thing, right? There's a certain time.
Have you checked your 401k?
Don't do it.
Don't look away.
And it was a different economic structure back then where you'd have a family farm that you would pass on to your son, and he would be the eventually, when you were old enough, you'd be the driving force behind making sure everything was was done, and they would provide for you. That's why part of the reason why children are a blessing from the Lord is part of the reason why being barren and childless was such a curse. It's like, who would look after you in your old age? And I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad thing that our society has moved away from that.
Yeah, and I guess a question to ask is, you know, what does it say about whether we retire, how we plan for retirement? What's the kind of the takeaway message? If it's not forbidding it, if it's not saying. Like you talked about, there's a difference, right? So what's the key difference? How could we, what does it look like for someone who's being wise and planning for when they can't produce income through their work or aren't producing income through their work versus a laying up for yourselves treasures on earth? How does that look? How would that look differently?
I think there's a difference in having enough for when you need it and having so much abundance that and nowhere for it to go or greedy children for it to go to or things like that. I mean, not being generous in your lifetime with your money, but having a lot of it when you die is not the goal.
Yeah.
There's no amount of real estate you can take with you when you go to heaven.
Yeah. And I think here it's talking about the laying up for yourselves treasures on earth. So it's this building up, it's this accumulating. In retirement, or in saving for retirement, there might be, like, this seems to lack any sort of purpose for the treasure. It's just stockpiling the treasure. When we have income that we are planning to use in a certain space, month by month, year by year, decade by decade, that may not necessarily be laying it up to store up treasure, but planning to use it at a certain time, kind of like you said, strategically.
Yeah, and I'd say, too, with your retirement, as you're retired, you store up treasure so that you can keep on, in your retirement years, giving and supporting, you know, various ministries and kingdom efforts that are important to you.
And it also, you know, in both places, it's talking about, you know, for yourselves, you know, lay up for yourselves. But lay up for yourselves. So kind of our personal, right, what we're doing for us is kind of being spoken to here, not necessarily, we're going to talk about how we view retirement, that question. Some people view retirement as a personal, my retirement is about me enjoying and getting all the things that I wanted to do, when I want to do it, whenever I want to, like I ask the kids in my high school class, you know, when do you think will be the best or worst 10 years of your life? And some of them said, I think it'll be retirement. Why? Because I can do whatever I want, whenever I want to do it. And so there's kind of this, there's one attitude, and I think there's also the attitude of, if I get old enough where I can't still do the work that I could before, how am I going to be provided for? You know, is that going to be my kids are going to be expected to do that, or is my spouse going to be expected to do that? Like, is there a way in which I can provide for myself even beyond what I'm able to work in that sense? So the way we view retirement or whether or not we're going to retire or what that retirement looks like, it can be really influenced by the scriptures. We talk about what is your purpose behind if you're saving, what you're saving, how much you're saving.
Yeah, and I think the other thing about retirement is if that's your attitude, it kind of is a low view of work. Like, is what you're doing valuable? Do you see the value of what you do? Like, if you have somebody who's an extremely gifted teacher and does a great job of educating students, when they stop doing that, that is a loss for that community. I think about me being a pastor, right? If I'm still with it, you know what I'm saying? For me to just, let's say, retire early so I can play, that would be a loss I would hope for. You know, the church. So taking yourself out of the workforce that you can play is a very different mindset than I think what scripture is aiming towards.
Yeah, so that, I think that's a good question. As we think about when you say the word retirement, I think there's probably multiple pictures that come up in your mind. And so the cultural picture would be, I don't want to work because I want to play instead. And so that's not...
Travel, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to take time for myself and no longer serve, no longer give, no longer... So, I mean, that's kind of on the one end, the far end of the spectrum. Or you've got the other end, you know, you've got forced retirement where I work, and then I just can't do the things that I could do anymore, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that job might be. If I'm a teacher, if I suddenly, I can't remember the names of the students, and I'm, oh, how does this go? You know, I can't, I know there's some, right, there's some point at which my faculties might. Okay, let's look at a few more scriptures before we talk about retirement as a whole, but 2 Thessalonians 3:10. Dave, you want to get that one?
For even when we were with you, we would give you this command. If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat.
Okay. And then 1 Thessalonians 4:11-12. Brian, you want to get that?
Aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your hands as we instructed you, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one.
Yeah. So Dave kind of mentioned like the view, like there's a low view of work. So what are the, what's it saying here? What are the kind of the verbs here describing the view of work? What do we want to have? Like in 2 Thessalonians it says, if anyone's not what?
Well,
yeah, they need to be willing to work. Oh, this is, I wish this marker were willing to work. There we go. You need to be willing to work. And then in the 1 Thessalonians, right, we're to aspire to live quietly, mind your own affairs, and to work with your hands. Right? Live was the first one. Mind and to work with your hands. And so notice that it doesn't say, they gave him this command, if anyone doesn't work, let him not eat. So how would that be different than if anyone is not willing to work? Why didn't he just say, if anyone doesn't work, they don't eat?
Some people truly can't.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe there are some that they're willing to work, but man, their back's out.
Seriously,
yeah, there's all sorts of reasons why.
And it could be a short-term thing or a long-term.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You could be really sick right now, therefore you can't work today, but you're willing to go to work tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you need someone to provide for you that day.
Yeah. Yeah. So it holds this view that it's a good thing to work, right? To be willing to work, and it should be our aspiration, right? Sometimes we can't live quietly, but we're aspiring to live quietly each time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and I think even in that culture, people didn't have a lot of savings, didn't have a lot of investments. I mean, you know, giving was a true sacrifice. And when you have somebody who's just willing to be a freeloader,
mm-hmm.
and they're not willing to work,
mm-hmm.
Just living off of the largesse of others, that's,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's kind of a form of, I'd say, stealing. You know?
Yeah, and so we kind of see, you've got those who can work, right? Those who work, those who won't work, and then you've got maybe ones who can't.
Yeah.
And so, right, with retirement, we're kind of mainly focused on are they in retirement because they can't work or because they won't work, type of a thing. Because you have these two different reasons why a person might not be able to or might not be working. And that we're giving specific direction on what to do if they're not willing to work, kind of in this they won't work category, right? So, yeah. So if you're in this category, right? If they're in the won't work, what's the scripture tell us to do? To work with our hands, right? It says, let him who doesn't work, work.
I was just thinking about my grandpa. My grandpa's, when I took a picture, it was a couple years back on a summer, and he's 89, just went out there, was working, because that's what he knows. That's what he does. We're talking a guy that would hold his own and scoop out mud out of a stock tank out of the bottom of it in his 80s, mm-hmm. and just not bat an eye at it. He mm-hmm. was crazy. That's all he knows to do. So, well, he's a very good man. So, yeah. Anyway, so
we have
he's adopted 65 as like he slowed down, but mm-hmm. stuff works.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And sometimes retirement comes, it's almost like forced. I know, and you guys may know farmers, or I know my wife's grandfather, he was kind of like slowly forced into retirement. You know, like, okay, I don't know that you need to be driving the combine anymore. Can't kind of get up into the cab, or, you know, certain faculties just started to go away. But what about if someone, they had relatives, right? And they couldn't work. The relatives, like you mentioned, would be responsible for providing for them. So if someone didn't have any relatives in this society, we're on page 7, I think, at the top of page 7. So if someone did not have any relatives to provide for them and they were too old, right, what could they do? So let's look at this passage in 1 Timothy. So we're kind of filling in our view of retirement based on kind of the context and the way things were long ago. 1 Timothy 5:16. If any believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Let the church not be burdened, so that it may care for those who are truly widows. Okay. So, right, you've got these widows who need someone to care for them. They don't have anyone to work to provide for them. And so they are kind of splitting them into two groups. Right? So they have widows. And who's going to provide for them? What are the two groups that we see in this passage?
Relatives and the church.
Yeah. You've got the church and you've got their relatives. Right? And so the widows who have relatives, right, they're supposed to be provided for by their family. And what's the purpose? Why?
So that the church isn't burdened?
Yeah, so that the church isn't burdened. So that's an interesting reason here. Right? So when it reaches a point where they can't completely or fully provide for their needs, that places a burden on someone to provide for them, in a sense. Okay, so we're thinking about this in that context. The way that it happened, they could no longer work. They didn't have 401ks, and they didn't have Social Security, and they didn't have all these other kind of systems in which, who's going to take care of me, get my food. So they had the relatives who would care for them, and if the relatives didn't, then where did the burden fall? Or if there wasn't any relatives?
The church.
It went to the church, right? So there was a burden. It wasn't that we wanted to just leave them to starve, right? We wanted to make sure that they were provided for. And so in that context, they're saying, you don't want to burden the church. You want to provide for these widows in some way. So that kind of leads us to, we're going to look at 1 Timothy 5:8. So how can saving up for your retirement be a provision to keep from burdening the church or even your family? So 1 Timothy 5:8. Jason, you want to read that one?
Yeah. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever.
Okay. So generally we think about this in the context of, right, during our working years. I'm working, I'm providing, I'm putting the roof over the head and feeding, putting food on the table. So what does that look like? How can you provide for your relatives when you get older, when you aren't able to work as much?
Well, I'll kind of share a story. As a young pastor at my old church, mm-hmm. we had a Spanish pastor who basically, he got colon cancer and then he eventually passed away. And on his deathbed, he told his wife, "The church will take care of you." And so the elders kind of looked into the finances and they realized that since he was a pastor, he opted out of Social Security, he leased his car, and he drove a nice car, he double mortgaged his house, and he had no retirement savings. And he told the church, he told his family, and he had three teenage sons, that the church will take care of you. And his widow, we paid for the funeral, and the funeral cost us like $39,000. In 2002. So we kind of saw where that was going.
Mm-hmm.
And he just made all these financial decisions to
mm-hmm.
live really well right now,
mm-hmm.
trusting that the church would be the backup plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was, and I remember we were talking about, what do we do in this situation? And the senior pastor just said, we need to remember that Pastor Danny's the bad guy here because he didn't provide for his family.
Yeah.
And so provision just looks, when we don't have an agricultural economy, provision kind of looks differently now than it does then
mm-hmm.
in case the worst happens. And so, there's a responsibility to do that for not even just counting on relatives picking up the slack,
mm-hmm.
Where you want to be the one who picks up the slack for others. Not live in such a way to assume that other people will pick up the slack
mm-hmm.
for you.
Yeah. I was thinking about this in terms of we've been, as a family, reading through the story and the life of Joseph, right? And so for 7 years, you wouldn't want to argue that Joseph was laying up for himself treasures on earth when he was storing up the grain, because it was through that he provided for and saved the lives of so many for all those years of drought when there wasn't anything to provide. So, I mean, what's kind of the takeaway here? How can we kind of define retirement in a way that it fits kind of this idea that we're going to serve and provide for our family? What's the goal? How are we serving the church, or how are you serving your family if you are making plans for some sort of retirement?
Well, you're seeing to it that you don't become a burden to the church.
Mm-hmm.
That you can still give and provide.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that then keeps the church and everybody else continuing to provide for those who are truly in need.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a sense in which that money or those resources are a way of storing up that extra amount of work that you can do beyond. And I think that that's kind of an important idea that we'll talk about a little bit when we get to debt as well, is that when you've got your needs, right, and your income, basically, right? When those are equal, right, you're not borrowing or stealing from kind of your future self. But when your income and your savings and your retirement as this is a greater amount than your needs, you're setting that aside for a time in which your income and your working output may be lower than what your needs might be, or where you might not be able to work anymore. And so your goal overall is that whether it's in the present or the future, right, your income is going to be able to provide for your needs. And sometimes it's I can produce a lot more now, right, and save that up so that later when I can produce less, I'm not dependent upon and needing from. And I don't want to say that it's a bad thing to provide for and help, your parents or the older generation. That there's nothing negative in that. I think the key thing is that you want to do as much as you can to not burden them beyond what's going to be a blessing and going to be helpful.
Yeah, there's a difference between you providing for your parents versus you expecting your kids to provide for you.
Right. Yeah.
I've seen with my parents, their parents have needed years and years of care. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, I think there was 8 years that they had 24/7 care in the home for my grandparents. And while it was a physical burden that, you know, of managing everything and taking care of everything and spending all of their time visiting there and providing food and those kinds of things, the fact that it wasn't a financial burden made that relationship so much better. Because they weren't having to, they were sacrificing all of their efforts, but they didn't also have to sacrifice all of their income to provide this level of care. And that was just a huge blessing for our family.
Yeah, and I think that there's, I think to compare like the story of the pastor, I know that with, you know, like with Chris's grandfather, there was probably 20 years where they thought he was probably going to die, you know, and, but they chose to invest, and he chose to invest in, you know, long-term medical care insurance and all these things that would help that never become a burden no matter how long that went, and chose to not to live off of that or squander it in other ways that he could have. That it was still a blessing, and at the same time he was actively giving to, you know, grandkids and great grandkids to distribute those things in a way that would bless his family, bless the church. So, but he was retired, you know, he wasn't out working in the fields anymore. What do you guys think? Anything? So that's kind of our, that's kind of the,
A great example I also think is George Sleaser, who was in the barber business until he was 65, then he retired. And he'll tell you the story you read, Don't Waste Your Life.
Yeah,
the seashells. And he went from wanting to fly fish the States to becoming basically a full-time, unpaid pastor here.
Yeah.
For I think the last 16 years. And it's been great. It's been some of the best years of his life because he's kind of used his extra time. I think Rick and John, they both recently retired.
Mm-hmm.
And they pretty much live at the church now.
Yeah. And it's amazing, too. I think the church, as well as the secular world, recognizes that when you retire, if you don't have a purpose and a mission for your time, there's just a huge decline in the quality of life, the physical life. It's just.
Yeah.
So having a plan and a purpose of. I think you said it's a different kind of work, or it's a change. It might not be income producing work, but knowing what you're going to be doing and committing your time and your life to during that stage, whether it's 60 or 70 or whatever that age is, our definition of retirement is not, oh, I'm going to stop working. It's going to change, but.
And it's really encouraging to see, like, Krista, for instance, like, the second she retires has like 20 new volunteer jobs. So she didn't have another. And that's how my parents are too, you know, but to see believers looking forward to retirement to think about all of the other ways they can bless their families and their church.
Yeah.
As an encouragement to those of us who are not there yet, that's what that should be instead of the play mindset.
Yeah.
That's what retirement should look like.
Yeah.
So if you have the means, you know, you planned, you have nobody who's depending on your income, you know, no need for anyway, and if you plan to use your retirement well, you're not just going to go out on cruises and whatnot, is it okay to retire early?
So, it's kind of we're going to get to that a little bit, too, with debt, and because we're going to talk about, like, the question I think is you're asking is, can you enjoy your money? Or I mean, I don't know.
Like, if I can get out of teaching at 54 and have enough to, you know, take care of myself for the rest of my life, hopefully. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, is that okay to get out of teaching at 54?
I would say I think the message of Scripture would be that you want to continue to find a way and a place to continue to do some sort of work that where you're serving and not just in self inwardly focused. And that may look like very different than teaching. But I think that whether it's going on vacations or just, you know, whatever it is that you want to do with that getting out of teaching. There's definitely a lot of freedom to enjoy it. We can go ahead and go, let's go ahead and go to Ecclesiastes. We're going to read this passage when we get to, is it okay to enjoy our money? I think it's passage, where was this? I wrote this down.
Several different industries that have mandatory retirement.
Yeah.
Air traffic controllers have to retire.
Yeah.
At 55.
Exactly. It's like, I still want to, you know, a pilot or.
Airline pilots have to retire at 60.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, either you're 55 as a controller or 60 as an airline pilot, you're done. Period. Mm-hmm. You cannot work anymore.
Yep.
So, is it wrong to retire early? Well, if it is, the government is hosing a bunch of people. But no, it's not. I don't think it is.
Right.
Because it comes down to the focus of what are you going to do now?
Yeah, and I think that what's at the heart of it is like, what do we mean by retirement? I think that the cultural, governmental definition is probably we're all going to retire.
Yeah.
Right.
But does that mean I'm going to just go out and become a hermit or just travel and never yeah. give, never serve, never... So what do we do when we make a transition, maybe from where we're not doing the work that we did for the bulk of our life? How do we transition to that last stage and live well? And one of the key things that we're trying to see from these passages is that we want to plan and work and live in such a way that we have the freedom to continue to serve and work in a way that we're not creating a burden for our families and church, and that we're helping to provide for the needs of our future self. For whether that's, you know, where we're going to live and what we're going to eat, and then how we use that time, it will have a lot more freedom in a sense to do that. So I think one of the great things, like with George's example, is that, you know, for when he was a barber, he was, you know, serving the Lord in his occupation, and he was serving the Lord in ministry. And when he was able to leave the barber profession, he was able to have a lot more freedom in what that serving the Lord looks like. So I think once you leave teaching, you'll have a lot more freedom with your hours as to how I'm going to serve the church, how I'm going to serve, how I'm going to enjoy the blessings. And I think that that's, when we talk about that as well, even now, although we're to be willing to work and aspire to work, we're not commanded to work with every living minute of our being, right? There's times of work and there's times of rest where you're trying to balance that. How do we balance how much we're working and earning? How do we balance how much we're spending? And
I think, like, so as teachers, we get to taste what retirement looks like a little bit, you know, because we get
right.
those summers when we create our own schedule, and, like, it's not lazing around all, I mean, there's some lazing around for sure, you know, like, but it's, I don't know,
yeah.
like, we begin to think through, okay, what's important here, you know, how am I going to schedule my day, my week,
mm-hmm.
my month, whatever, to make these things work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, and even for those who have a great deal with that passage with Matthew 6, when we get caught up, if we get too caught up in that retirement, kind of in the world's mindset, it's never enough in that, even that they can't retire sometimes because they're concerned with building up more and more and more, acquiring more treasures. And so let's go to Ecclesiastes. I'm going to see if this helps a bit. So chapter 5, Ecclesiastes chapter 5, he's talking about, you know, what he's observed about wealth. Psalm is. So in chapter 5, verse 18, I'll read down to 6:2. Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun in the few days of his life that God has given him. For this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them, and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil. This is the gift of God. For he will not much remember the days of his life, because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. There is an evil that I have seen under the sun that lies heavy on mankind, a man to whom God gives wealth, possessions, and honor, so that he lacks nothing of all that he desires. Yet God does not give him the power to enjoy them, but a stranger enjoys them. This is vanity, and it's a grievous evil. So what is the what's he observing here? What's going on?
Joy is the difference, and the joy that comes from God.
Mm-hmm. He says it's a good thing to enjoy the work and the wealth. He says enjoyment in all the toil, right? And has given wealth and possessions and the power to enjoy them, right? And he, what was the great evil that he?
Somebody that has all of that but doesn't have from God the ability to enjoy it.
Yeah. And so there's a sense in which there's a certain joy and maybe even a contentment with your lot of God's given us work. It's a joyful thing to work, and it's a joyful thing to enjoy both the work, the labor, and the wealth and the possessions that God gives you through those labors. And so that kind of helps to inform both our idea of work, our idea of retirement, and even our idea of how we should spend our money if we have, you know, excess, if we're making more than we need.
I think how he ends out in verse 20 with, "For he will not much remember the days of his life, because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart." That speaks to contentment,
mm-hmm.
and not well.
Yeah.
Directly tied. So my grandma always loved that saying. There was a parable, but the third man in this parable or this story that had more or less and said, you know, I never had everything. I always had enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that hit hard with me a long time ago. And I was like, I've been chewing on it for a long time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
She's probably read this a few times.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the second question before we have to go today. So, what about debt, right? Now, we're going to read through a passage from Old Testament, Leviticus chapter 25. So, this is to the nation of Israel. And let's read that. Let's see. Brian, I'm going to read this. Leviticus 25, 35 through 38.
If your brother becomes poor and cannot maintain himself with you, you shall support him as though he were a stranger and a sojourner, and he shall live with you. Take no interest from him or profit, but fear your God, that your brother may live beside you. You shall not lend him your money at interest, or give him your food or profit. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God.
Alright. Yeah, so you have this passage directed to them talking about lending money and interest. And is this mainly towards the lender or the borrower that he's addressing?
To the lender.
Yeah, he's talking to the lender here. And I guess, does this forbid him to lend money at all? Does it forbid him from all interest? What's the, no, why? What's the scenario here?
You should support him without profit, basically. But
upon the condition that he's poor and cannot maintain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if he has a brother that's not poor and, right, and wants to borrow money, is he okay to lend him money at interest?
I suspect this is where it gets difficult. Is where do you draw the lines?
Well, I think it says if your brother becomes poor,
mm-hmm.
and again going back to their society of what their wealth was a part of, or how they gained or kept wealth. If a flood comes through and kills off all of his crops and washes away his barn,
mm-hmm.
he just became poor.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't have any control over that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we need to treat him as a brother and we mm-hmm. lend him money and not gain interest mm-hmm. and give him food and not,
mm-hmm.
he's an idiot and he went out there and did some stupid business stuff.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can help him out, lend yeah. him some money to get back on his feet, but I don't think there's any reason why they couldn't charge interest for a situation like that. I think other scripture speaks to that. But there's the why behind this of what's happening.
Yeah, the why, the heart. Like, what's the heart of the message of what's being said here? Why is he giving this command?
Not to take advantage of
them. Not to take advantage of someone through when they're in their greatest need, right? Charging them interest upon when they have to borrow. And he says, if he becomes poor, cannot maintain himself, and this is, he's compared to what? As though he were stranger, sojourner, someone who didn't have any connections, they were traveling through, they didn't have probably family in the land. So there's this sense then which they're in a very vulnerable position. Okay. And so he's saying, you know, don't lend money and interest to make money off of him, to make profit off of him. All right. So what are some common, if we were to try and apply that today, is there any scenarios in which we see lending money at interest for profit to people who are poor and cannot maintain themselves?
Kind of makes me think of payday lenders. You know, they're charging quite a bit of the interest, and they're preying on the people who are least likely to have everything go well going forward. I mean, they found themselves in a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly through their own decisions, but...
Yeah. Yeah, and the heart is that, right? When people are in their greatest need, it's not an opportunity for profit, but a time to look for ways that we can help. And sometimes, you know, that helped me look different, right, than just lending money. It can look all sorts of ways. What about Proverbs 22? This one we hear quite a bit when it comes to lending. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is the slave of the lender. So what about this? Does this forbid all lending? Does it forbid going into debt? Does it forbid borrowing?
There's no command here. It's just a general principle.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily a command. It's a principle.
Yeah. I think there's a truth to it. I've been reading some articles about there's a movement underway where you have these large private equity firms that have big stakes in major companies. And what a lot of political activists are doing is that they're pressuring these private equity firms to, let's say, have like an environmental scorecard of the companies that they invest in as a way to try to move them to, let's say, do carbon offsets and some of these other things to stop global warming. They're doing the same thing with diversity and, you know, the stance on abortion. And so you have companies like Walmart, and they have a private equity company that has a big stake in them, and these private equity companies are being pressured by these activists to kind of shape the policy.
Yeah.
You know, and so even if you're a big corporation and you sell a bunch of stock so that other people own part of your company, you know, there's an influence that they can have on you because they're holding your note. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think it's a truism.
Yeah.
Something to be aware of.
Yeah, the whole, that in the sense that that corporation is their slave of their lenders. Whoever holds their, very much so.
Even Walmart.
Even Walmart. Yeah, so what does that, I mean, what does that truism tell us about if we're considering borrowing and using debt or having debt? What's it? What is something that we should keep in mind?
You're placing yourself under someone else's, I don't know if authority is exactly the right word, but for sure under their influence.
And yeah.
They can take away what they've given you if you don't act the way they want you to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the image that they, like you said you weren't sure about authority, but it says the rich rules and the borrower is the slave, right? So it's a very much a, you are under their authority in a sense. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I even look at, going back to the example of Joseph, how one of the ways that Pharaoh acquired all that land is people basically would mortgage their fields
mm-hmm.
to get food, and all of a sudden Pharaoh had this huge land empire as
mm-hmm.
a result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They literally became slaves.
Mm-hmm. So I think one time, or a little bit last week, we talked about when they were going through, there was some, like there's 14, we called them tips or steps.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit about, is there a difference between debt and obligations? And so these couple questions kind of get at that. Like, can you think of maybe wrong reasons, poor reasons for going into debt or borrowing, or are there any right reasons you can think of or good reasons you can think of for using debt?
Well, I think it's very different to put yourself on a 15-year mortgage and investment in a property that's going to serve your family and then to, you know, lease a Lexus. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's the decision-making, the purpose, and the amount of time. I mean, I think debt should be purposeful and short.
Okay.
And, I mean, and I'm primarily speaking of...
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I think there's just different heart motivations and different
mm-hmm.
kinds of debt.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think it stands to reason to talk about whether it's an appreciating or depreciating asset.
Mm-hmm.
What's the use of it? Will it further provide for you, for your ministry, for your desires? What you're going to do with it? All of those things factor into a significant choice, as in willingly going into debt.
Mm-hmm.
It's nerve-wracking,
mm-hmm.
and you've got to justify it. And it's not easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. I'll do better.
Any other, like, just real examples of good things he's here? Clearly good, clearly bad.
I know Peter Howell talked about how there's a, maybe it's Ottawa, they want to build a library, but they want to have enough money to be able to pay up front, to pay for the entire cost of the project.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're finding is they're never going to have enough money because the cost keeps on going up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, sometimes going into debt is a way of making sure that you can get the contractor in,
mm-hmm.
get the project started, benefit from the use of whatever you're doing. Like, I look at our building, if we were to pay as we go,
mm-hmm.
What cost us $900,000 initially
mm-hmm.
would be $1.5 million now,
mm-hmm.
and we'd still be literally just as far away from it, from building it, as we are right now with how much money we raise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so there's a sense in which, you know, the truism is that you become the slave or the servant to the lender, but there's an exchange that happens, that sometimes you exchange that freedom, you know, for servitude to gain things like the risk that's taken on. So when the bank loans you the money, they're assuming all the risk to the loss of the property and that type of thing, and you're assuming the servitude that you're going to pay that money back. And so you're willing to give up that freedom to pay continually, and they're willing to take on that risk in order to gain the financial gain of the interest and things like that. So there's a sense in which it's a voluntary agreement, and whether or not that is best for you and your family may depend on. I think one of the big things that Gabe mentioned is, yeah, whether or not is this something that's going to be appreciating, that's going to be saving money in the long run? Is this going to be an asset? I think an asset, something that can produce more income or can grow in value.
Yeah, like a factory.
Yeah. That's a key kind of difference to think about. Or is it something that just depreciates and doesn't really produce or have any income? So those might be things that might be, when you think about financing or going into debt for going out to eat and going on vacation and it's gone, right? That may not be a very wise use of borrowing in that sense. Larry Burkett, that he talks about that idea of freedom, that you can't be financially bound and spiritually free. So there's a sense in which, like you're saying, what you do with your resources is, if it's constrained by certain amounts of debt, that money that can't be allocated to whatever purposes you want to use it for, some of it is set aside. So I'm limited in how much I can give to the church by how much I'm paying to my mortgage each month. And so there's a certain lack of freedom there. So I was going to talk about how, there's a little bit of room for, there's kind of a sense in which, like, if you invest money, people have different risk tolerance, and I think the same thing's true with debt. There's different people that speak, and, you know, one of the common ones around here is, like, the Dave Ramsey, and so he talks about how, you know, they never borrow, never debt, you know, they say maybe mortgage. One of the interesting things I found in one of their studies was they looked at marriages, and they said in one of the studies that the larger the couple's debt, the more likely they were to say that's the top issue that they fight about. And he said about 48% of couples with $50,000 or more in consumer debt say money is a top reason for arguments. That would make sense, right? And those with $50,000 or more in debt were 3 times more likely than couples with $10,000 or less to say that the tone of their conversations about money is negative. So, you know, as your debt goes up, your consumer debt goes up, it creates more stress within your marriage. It makes it more difficult to be free with your decisions about money because it's more and more tied into taking care of that debt, serving that debt. So, it's an interesting statistic there. So, are we allowed to go into debt? Can we borrow money?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, we can. Can we lend money and gain interest? We can. I mean, so it's more of a wisdom issue than it is a sin issue. Okay, so that leaves us to the next time. We'll talk about... What is the next question? Oh, does the Bible allow for mothers to work outside the home? Oh boy, that'd be great. Let me pray for us. Father, I thank you for the wisdom of your word. And God, this can be, it just can be very confusing when we try and work out whether or not we should borrow money, whether or not we should lend money, whether we should invest money for retirement. And our lives are so different and so... I pray that your principles that you teach us about debt and about providing for ourselves, about being willing to work, about having an attitude that values work, having the heart that seeks to free up our families and the church to serve and do ministry and relieve them of the stress and the burden of providing for our needs, I pray that those heart attitudes would guide us in our marriages to help make wise decisions. Help us to make wise decisions about how to save and invest for such a way that our life can continually be a service to you and in a way that will bless others. And I pray that we would also think about that in terms of whether or not and when we borrow and whether we use debt in such a way that it's something that is wise and brings glory to you and honor to you and is a way that just points people to your goodness as our great provider that always meets our needs. I pray that you continually give us wisdom in this area and help us to grow in this area and help us to have good and fruitful conversations in our marriages. I pray that you be with us this morning as we continue to worship you. In Jesus' name, amen.